outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, here I am back in my bunker as we're being assaulted by the Russians. Yeah, believe it or not, my websites, both the God Journey and Lifestream, are being barraged by brute force attacks from Russian hackers. And I don't know why. May have been some comments I made about Donald Trump. I have no idea, but my goodness, I have been assaulted. We've got all kinds of new protection things up. So if you're having trouble signing into my website, there are ways around it. So let us know if you need to get in there. But we right now are really trying to protect everything from somebody taking over the website and doing whatever nasty things they want to do. But I'm back from my trip to Denver and got a chance there to sit down with Kyle and Jess Rice. Hi, Kyle. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Wayne. Glad you made it back in one piece. Sounds a little crazy to be fending off Russian hackers as soon as you land back in Southern California.
Oh, no, we were fending them back. We were fending them off in Denver as well. It's been going on for a couple of weeks, but I'm not doing the fending. I've got people. I've got a person who does my web stuff, and he's having to keep redoing security stuff, and I can't even get into my website some days. It's just kind of nuts because, you know, I don't know why. I don't know why they're picking on us. I don't think the website is that noteworthy. Go pick on Google or Facebook or somebody else. Don't pick on me. Anyway, we're getting around it. I think they haven't gotten through yet, so that's the good news. But they keep trying. So, yeah, you and I got to sit down in Denver with Jess and I. It was nice. We social distanced across the driveway. But, man, it was good to finally see you. But we're recording on Zoom again. So here we are back in the whole remote thing since you're up in Wyoming and I'm in Southern California. But it's great to see you guys and that new daughter of yours that we had yet to see in person.
Oh, it was great to get to see you guys as well. It's crazy with, you know, going from the smoke in Denver, even it was a beautiful day, you know, going from smoky Denver and then you're going back to smoky Southern California.
It's not smoky here, fortunately. There's places in California where it's very smoky, but we have not had much smoke here in Ventura County. So we're kind of holding our breath, hoping it hangs in there. But Phil, if you don't know, we took off back to Denver to visit my son since he's not able to come out here right now and none of us are flying. So we rented another RV. We risked the Drug Enforcement Administration program going on in Utah to catch the bad guys. At least this time we weren't in something that looked like a rental since we rented from a private party instead of renting at a rental service. But yeah, we made it back and then we got there, spent a week with my son, and then we kind of came back this way and went down to Arches National Park in Utah to see all the stone arches. And we're going to spend a day and a half there, but we decided to stay a little longer in Denver because Sarah wanted to spend her birthday with Andrew and we could watch the debate from the presidents. And then we got on the road the next morning. But I'm telling you, as beautiful as Arches National Park is and taking a hike around there with our pups, not in the park because you can't do it with dogs, but outside the park and saw some great stuff. But you know what? Half a day was enough. You can only look at rocks so long. I'm kind of a tree lake kind of guy. I'm not just walking over rocks in the sun for all day long. So we had enough. And then we went from there down to Flagstaff the next morning, met with some friends that went with us on the first Israel trip. And so we did a social distance dinner in a park to talk to them and catch up with them. So
did it feel different being back, even though you were socially distanced, but starting to reconnect in person with some of the community that you've built around the nation?
I have not built this community. I'm not claiming credit for it at all. Well, but people I know, yeah. I mean, but it's still hard because there's a lot of people in and around Denver that, hey, you're here. We'd love to connect with you. And I'm going, you know, it's just not possible to do that. We were able to see you guys, but you know, to be able to pull together, you know, some people who can meet each other and enjoy a conversation. And I just don't see how that works quite yet with what's going on. And we're not being careless about it because of Sarah. It's hard. It's fun when we do get to see familiar faces. But I talk to a lot on Zoom, so I'm not feeling like, I'm dying of loneliness or anything. So this has given me a lot of time. In the first part of this pandemic, doing a lot of content stuff, and now I'm in a little different mode. So I'm getting a lot of chance to write and rewrite some stuff. A new book we're going to have out by the end of the year. Some of you who have been on the Lifestream email list, you might be getting a breath of fresh air, which is 3 times a week, sending out a little quote from something I wrote in the past. And someone else is selecting those, not me. I'm having fun reading them myself. And then this week we started on Instagram 3 days a week, a different kind of artsy type quote that this lady from Pennsylvania is doing. And so those are going up. So 6 days a week, you can get a dose of Wayne Jacobson, which I think would be dangerous. But if you want it, it's there. So Facebook, Instagram to get the one, and signing up for Breath of Fresh Air at lifestream.org will get you the other one. And if you want some quotes. And then the other thing I'm working on is a devotional book. This is kind of funny because I haven't announced it yet. People don't know. I didn't know up till a couple weeks ago probably. But that's what I was working on. When Sarah was driving, coming home in the RV, I was back in the dining room working on this devotional because someone that we had around a few years ago went back through my old blog posts, articles from the Living Love newsletter, and put these into little, simple, 1-200-word devotionals, and 365 of them. I'm going through editing now to make sure it's still the language I want to use. But Hopefully we're shooting to try and get it out by the end of the year, so it'll be available come January 1, but it takes a lot of work from me. I'm now up today, just before you and I connected, I'm up through July 16th, I believe. So making progress. And hopefully then we'll have that. But I love what she's done. I love how she's broken the thoughts up, pulled it together, dropped a little scripture in. And I think it's just kind of, I've enjoyed working on them. I've enjoyed, oh, I forgot I wrote that. I forgot it. Did I write that? I don't even remember writing that. But since I don't have ghostwriters or staff, I must have written it. So that's been kind of fun. And hopefully we'll get the devotional out by the end of the year. And if you want to grab that, we'll obviously make it available when we get there. And one other thing before we get started, doggone it. I found out I've been hoodwinked. A couple of years ago, 2018, I got real excited about a new media resource that was out called the Knife Media. It was a service that was really trying to cut between the bias, both left and right, and really trying to provide not just objective news articles. They were doing that. They were also pointing out what was biased about this New York Times article or this Fox News report or whatever. They were actually going through saying, see, now this is the fact behind what they're saying. This is how they interpret it to slant it toward their audience. And I thought it was a great tool. In fact, I was in New York when I kind of was just beginning to read this, found out the guy who was editing it, he and I had a little bit of an exchange, and then he's in the city I'm in. So we had breakfast one morning. He was the editor of this thing, and I sit down, we had a long talk, but I couldn't figure out how the finances of this thing worked. How are you making money off of this? Not a lot of advertising on it, not a lot of whatever. And it was a subscription service, I believe. And the guy, when I tried to nail down who's behind this all, was a little bit sketchy. You could tell he was hiding something. And I'm like, okay, so I don't know. But we talked about it on the God Journey, recommended it as a news resource. And then a few months later, it vanished. And I just thought, what happened to that? I mean, I guess the economics didn't work, whatever. Well, there's a new video series out called The Vow. I think it's a documentary. I haven't seen it yet. It's on HBO Max, and it's about this sex cult leader. His name is Keith Raniere, I think. And he's got this sex cult where even brand women, physically brand them. Yeah, it's real. He started the Knife Media, and he started it to do a couple of things. One, he wanted to point out biases against Donald Trump. He was really on the Donald Trump bandwagon. It was part of it. The other part of it was, you want to be able to determine media, who's honest and who's not, create that aura. So if anyone criticized his sex cult, he could go against them.
Oh, and disclaim them.
Yes. And, you know,
wow.
It's sad because I thought it's a news source we need. Not obviously that, and not with all that agenda, but we do need a media resource because which we're going to talk about a little bit today, we have people living in news silos that get very, very different news and have very different set of facts. I was with a friend earlier today, a local friend, and we were talking about some of the election stuff going on, and I cannot believe the information he has that he thinks is true. And I'm going, none of that is true. Very little of that is true. And when I'd say that, he'd go, oh, you're reading the wrong stuff. And I'm saying, well, maybe I am. Yeah. But I definitely know what you're saying isn't true, and yet he's not even questioning it. That's a problem because we don't have a media source of record that people from the left, from the right can go to and say, hey, these are the facts. There's no shared facts anymore. This group has a set of facts, in quotes. This group has a set of facts, in quotes. And they really think theirs are the facts. Whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's political stuff, whether it's the economy, whether it's COVID, whether it's mask wearing. My heart hurts because we don't have a common set of facts on which we can interpret differently and talk about our different interpretations, which is fine. But when you don't even agree on what's true, because that's been so obfuscated, particularly, you know, by a president who's always screaming fake media at anything he doesn't like, when he's doing his own fake media by all the stuff he tweets, much of it is not true. And it's just caused us as a country no longer to have a shared media, no longer to have a shared sense of what's true. And so anyway, I thought the knife media was a good stab at that. Stab, I get the pun. But in any case, it's not working. So it no longer exists. And I guess had a pretty evil agenda behind it. So I don't know. I'm going to watch that DeVal thing at some point, but I haven't got to it yet.
I saw that come up on my stream, and I was interested into what that was about. So it's intriguing that you bring that up.
Yeah, I've got a friend watching it. He keeps saying, do you know about this? Do you know about that? I'm going, oh, okay, now I'm going to have to go back and take a look at it. Some emails before we get started, Kyle. I think you might enjoy this. A couple from Are the Spirits Still Dancing, which Bob Prater and I did on his vision about religions and political spirits dancing together. This from Jake. He's a 26-year-old former churchgoer and pastor's grandson navigating through tumultuous times we live in, both in terms of the pandemic as well as the civil unrest, has proven to be a challenge. My family and a few other close friends started a small group probably a year ago or 18 months now, all stemming from the same church and have followed the God journey as we go on. That's interesting. We're the content provider, I guess. One thing that I keep coming back to in terms of how I see things is that Christians, and he puts that in quotes, however the term fits, often act like God instead of Jesus, which I thought was an interesting distinction. Now, I had to crawl back into my old, more religious ways to get that distinction, because now I'm really set on Jesus was the exact representation of the nature of the Father. I mean, Hebrews says that. I used to teach that even if I didn't believe it, because I saw God the Father as bad cop and Jesus as good cop, right? So when he says people act more like God, it's that bullying, anger, forcing my way, disparaging people who disagree with me. But when he says it that way, I thought, that's very interesting. More like God than Jesus, because Jesus was too nice. And I notice my religious friends, when I talk this way around them, the one story they always come back to is Jesus clearing the temple. Well, Jesus cleared the temple, didn't he? Yes, he did.
He fashioned that whip and drove the taxpayers
beat
out.
The tax collectors. But
tax collectors, not payers. Crud out of tax collectors.
The image, and that's the one example they have of Jesus can get mean sometimes, so it's okay if I'm mean all the time, which I find disgusting. But I thought it was an interesting comment. Often act like God instead of Jesus, and yet God and Jesus are the same. Jesus is the nature of God, and whatever we misunderstood from God in the Old Testament, it's reshaped in Jesus, and I'm going to always climb on that soapbox and scream like crazy. Chelsea wrote this, thank you for this podcast. I was feeling isolated in my yuck meter when I saw a few of my fellow brothers and sisters buying into the conspiracy theories about child trafficking led by the Obamas and the Clintons. I have other friends ramping up their preparedness for Christ's second coming, turning to prophecy to process what is happening in the world, which I do think is valid. But it doesn't change what I'm doing day to day. My point of empathy with these people has been, this is what this person needs to tell himself to feel safe.
Hmm.
That is a great way to process, particularly when you see people responding to the current situations we have in the world, and they're doing it out of fear. To say, this is what they need to tell themselves to feel safe. And that's a really, I think, a lovely point of empathy. She said, your point was similar in that this is what people need to feel in control. I can understand wanting to feel safe and in control, and finding this entry to empathy has been vital to my relationships over the past few months. I love that, because just what you tell yourself to feel safe isn't the same as what's true that makes you safe.
True. Oh, man, that's so true.
And we live in incredibly difficult times, no doubt.
Yeah, we do. And I think trying to, we haven't been well prepared to live in tension. That's not something that humans do well, is living in a place of limbo or tension or being pulled back one direction or another. We like to feel like we have that semblance of control, or that we have that space in our life that we're able to say, no, I can actually dictate which way this goes or how this is going to happen.
And find our safety in God and his presence with us, even if the world goes to hell in a handbasket. I mean, we look at the early church suffering the persecution of Rome, suffering the persecution of the Jews, who thought they were an affront to what God had revealed to them. So you've got an early church who really learned to live in God's got our back. God's with us. Even if we're led into the Colosseum and get eaten by lions, even though it never happened in the Colosseum, that happened down the Hippodrome, as we found out when we were in Rome. But even if that's going on, the young believers were saying, we're going to find our security in who God is. Not in some false prophecy, not in some conspiracy theory, and that's where we need to find our peace. And if you haven't found your peace there yet, this is a good time to explore that with Jesus and say, man, how do I find my peace in you? How can I be at rest in what's going on? Because I know no matter what happens in the world, you have a plan and a process for me and a place where I can dwell, where I'm safe in you, regardless of how disturbed my circumstances are.
And yet it's such a challenge, though. I feel like, especially in this COVID situation, and, you know, we've talked a little bit about some of the fears that I wrestled with and have been wrestling with during this season of time. And yet, like, we're constantly being bombarded with it. That's what I wrestle with, is like, how do I say semi aware of what's going on in the world around me, or even should I? And yet, like, everything else around me is just constantly bombarding me with this intention of fear, or trying to get me to buy into the tension or the angst that they are feeling. Do I need to take up the monastic order with my wife and daughter and, like, move to some place where there's no access to anything? Man, it is tough to navigate that, I find.
Yeah, that's a good segue into what we wanted to talk about today, the social dilemmas. We're a little early yet. I don't want to go there yet, but we are bombarded by all of that stuff. I find to give news and that kind of a place in my life, but it's not a big place. It's a small place. Yeah. I like staying aware, like what you said, but I don't spend my day being bombarded by messages of fear. Now, people do that. People send me all that stuff, and I just got to... I don't let it go in anywhere. I read it, so I'm aware of it, and then I go on and answer them as best I can if they're looking for some thoughts about it. But there's just too much going on. As we'll see, the media we have is ramping up that whole conflict thing. This whole thing's turned out to be about media, because that is a huge problem today in the division that we're experiencing, for sure. Then we got this I thought was really fun. This is about the podcast you and I did, where you kind of really opened up a tender part of your life, Kyle. This is, gosh, almost a month ago now. This was Bob. He wrote on the blog, but I thought this is, if you missed it, you might want to hear this. And I remember well the last day of seventh grade, and the principal was saying goodbye to each of us as we exited the school for the last time that year. I said to him, Mr. Robertson, I'll try hard to be a good boy next year, meaning a better boy, to which he tilted his head and said to me, Bobby, you're already a good boy. I didn't know what he meant, and obviously couldn't accept what he was referring to me. Some of these horrible, dysfunctional lies are ingrained so deeply in many of us that even coming to know Christ wasn't and isn't a magic pill that makes us feel better about ourselves or feel forgiven or accepted by a Heavenly Father or hopeful or a part of. Thoughts of suicide pervaded me nearly every day, thinking, especially after my own alcoholism began to come out of hiding. I was 11 years sober, 7 years back in the church when I picked up a book, He Loves Me, and slowly scales began to fall from my eyes. I still took me almost 5 more years to finish the book because the statements in it and truths it spoke were so foreign to my mind that it just took that long to finish it. I'm exploding this more deeply every day, and some more than others, LOL, and I'm living a life with a loving Father and sharing it with others who still struggle to be good enough for God to love. Well, I don't know what his upbringing was like. It sounded like it was pretty tormented, thought of himself as a bad kid, going to try and do better. Yeah. This principle is a godsend, man.
Oh.
They would speak that in, you're already a good boy. May not always act in that way, but you are at your heart, and somehow getting back in touch with that.
I wonder if that principle has any idea. because I feel like so many of us, as we're going through life, there's those snippets or those opportunities where somebody makes a comment like that, and yet often we don't know how deep that really runs,
and how long it took to bear fruit. Yeah,
yeah,
because he had nowhere to put it at the time.
But the beauty of it is that God, our healer, who's constantly trying or creating opportunities for our heart to step into a deeper experience of freedom and love, he held on to that.
Yeah.
And was able to bring that up as a reminder or as a memory that, and I would love to know when that memory first came back to him.
Yeah, me too.
When did he first encounter that memory again? When did God bring that up? Because I bet there's some power behind that moment too.
And my contention has always been, in our fallenness, it's easier to believe the bad stuff said about us and dismiss the good stuff that is true. Yeah. I think that's what makes it really hard for some people to listen to Jesus, because Jesus is speaking encouraging, uplifting words into their life, but they're discarding those because it's easier to believe, I'm a cruddy person, I need to try harder, I'm a failure, I'm this, I'm that. And it seems to be so, that it's easier to believe the bad things about us than the words Jesus wants to speak and to call out of us into a different reality that's alive and vital. So, and then Rosa wrote this also on the blog. I almost switched off the podcast at the prayer part. Felt it was a sacred moment between Kyle and God. So glad I didn't, because the words about falling back into, and I think that's like falling back into the love of God, and the difference between performance and relationship really struck me. A number of years ago, I had the mentality, for example, maxing out the credit card and thinking I needed to sort it out by trying harder to skimp and save and clear it before I could ask God for financial help. Having our lives turned upside down to a point of not believing God existed anymore, I came back to him like a toddler in faith and let him lead, literally saying, God, if you want this relationship, you're going to have to do the work. I was even amazed when I said to God, I really stuffed up financially. Can you help me fix it? And he did. Encouragement came from the weirdest and most unexpected places, and funds to pay off the credit card just poured in. I'm interested in your thoughts about how self-control as a fruit of the Spirit fits with performance and relationship with God. That's how she ends it. Oh. I loved her story, man. I love that whole idea of, man, if I've screwed up, because that whole thing was about making mistakes, right? It was about is God bigger than the mistakes we make? And our thoughts oftentimes, no, I've made my bed, I've got to sleep in it. Instead of, no, at my most broken, that's the Hebrews 4 scripture. We have this faithful high priest who empathizes with our weakness so that we can draw mercy and grace in time of need. When do we need mercy and grace? It's when we've screwed it up. That's when we need it. That's when we need a God who comes along and says, okay, you've made a mess here. I want to walk you through this and not only rescue you, but maybe help you learn how to not quite make this mess again. You know, both.
Yeah.
But it's not, oh no, you know, you got to fix this now because I'm out till you get this done. And then maybe I'll come back when you've earned it. That's all these things we think about God are so crazy.
I deeply resonate with her question about, you know, what's the difference between self-control and how did she phrase it again? Self-control and
as a fruit of the Spirit with performance and relationship.
With performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was having a conversation with a group of guys last night about that exact same thing, about the tension between feeling this responsibility, like this is the responsible choice or the self-controlled choice, versus the performance choice. And I was talking to a group of guys, they were all in their mid-30s, they're all early to mid-30s, they're all working professionals, and every single one of them is running up against this career just yuck of the previous generation of basically.
Be easy on us, old people.
I'll be okay. So, so current employers, we'll just say,
yeah, let's go with that.
We'll go with current employers, that have the mentality that you're only as good as your performance is, and you're easily replaceable. Anybody in this company is replaceable. You don't actually matter. If you want to quit, go for it. That's your, you know, that's your prerogative. We'll find somebody the very next day. And I mean, the soul killing that has on people's hearts, especially as, I mean, I'm coming from you know, the millennial generation that's perceived as, you know, lazy and they don't come to work on time and they have all this.
But you were a little late to this podcast, if I could just point that out, Kyle. No, no one else.
Okay.
Knows. I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, it just, I just wrestle with that because they were just talking about how do we, you know, the responsible thing, like one individual had gotten his law degree and is 2 years into law. And his intention was to be able to free up his wife to stay at home. And he had some really big job offers at some very, very large firms that would have paid super well. But he took a job at a smaller firm at half the pay because he wanted supposedly more time with his family and with his wife. And yet now he's considering potentially leaving his field because the expectation is the same. Like we need you in the door, but you need to be, if you're the youngest associate, you need to be in the door before anybody else and out the door, the last before anybody else or the last of anybody in the office. And that's the expectation. That's just what you need to be doing. And man, and yet, like, at least for all, like, every single one of these guys was wrestling with a current situation along those regards of what's the responsible choice versus what is the God, what is the faithful, what is the trusting choice that, no, God, you genuinely have life and life to the full. And is this career or is this, you know, is the responsible thing of providing for my family or, you know, because it doesn't seem, like you said when you talked with me, that one time, it seems incredibly irresponsible to follow your heart.
Not always, but when your heart leads you to do things that seem irresponsible, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it can seem very irresponsible to follow your heart. And I feel like God is constantly coaxing people into that next level of trust, especially right now as our culture and everything that we've held on to as security is being kind of thrown up in the air and completely upended.
Yeah, I don't know how that's connected to. I would take self-control as a fruit of the Spirit a very different direction than that. But
yeah.
In terms of, you know, just how you make a decision, when you feel like God's called you to a field and you feel like, okay, this is the way I access that field. And so for a few years in my life, I may have to work harder than I want to work and whatever. Then I think you just sometimes bite the bullet and do it. Mm-hmm. Other times you've got to say, you know what, if this is what it costs, maybe this is not where I want to be. And I've made choices that way too, saying this, the choice is greater than I'm willing to pay for that period of time because of what it will suck out of my life in other ways. But there's always trade-offs. That's why trying to solve this stuff as a matter of principle is almost impossible, right? Mm. Because we really need to have, okay, Jesus, what are you saying to me? Are you telling me to knuckle down that this will open other doors? And so this is a really, you know, like my dad during harvest time on the farm, man, we were going straight from school to the vineyard, pulling in grapes and raisins, sometimes working till midnight if we had to get the crop in before the rain came. And that wasn't very often, but it did happen. And then we didn't go to school the next day. I mean, so, there are times when you have to make really, really hard decisions that are temporary. They're not necessarily the way you would live your life, but it needs to be done. And other times when you realize the cost of it, I can't imagine any good manager just saying, hey, you don't want to suck it up and do it. Then we just got someone else to replace you. Get out of here. I think that guy's a bad manager. I just don't think most good management people are going to talk to their workers like that. I mean, you want to encourage them. You want to help them. You put an investment into somebody. It's not just, hey, we'll get somebody else. You're out of here. Not unless it's extreme in some way.
You know, the spooky part is, Wayne, I can't tell you how many young guys and young men and women that are in young working professionals that have had almost those identical words told to them.
Hmm.
Numerous conversations and examples. Even people that I deeply respected and thought were good managers have told me, Kyle, look, this institution, they don't care about you as an individual. They only care about the profitability and the success of their institution. And so if when you get tired or if you have any opposition to that, they'll go ahead and say, you know what, if you can't do this anymore, we'll find somebody else that will. And that's the hard part, Wayne, is I've heard that. I've had so many other people tell me the exact same thing and have had the exact same conversations. And so then they're wrestling with that, because I'm sure when she was talking about self-control, I'm sure she was talking about potentially, like, you know, maybe the spending or like how she's investing her finances possibly, or that type of thing. But at least for a lot of the guys that I'm counseling right now, the self-control concept of the fruit of the spirit is, how long do I hang into this? How long do I endure? How long do I maintain this for the sake of my family, for my long-term career projections, et cetera, versus just ducking out or quitting or trying to find a different path?
Yeah, or finding out corporate law isn't what I want to practice. Maybe I want to open my own law firm. And that's where I think entrepreneurial, if you don't want to work for the man or the woman who wants to run your life, then I think entrepreneurship, or looking for a more generous employer, or moving if you have to, but finding someone, even if it's in your field that you really want to explore, I think you just keep finding the environment in which you'll most flourish doing it. And that takes God's leading. I was thinking she meant by the self-control thing is interesting, performance to let Jesus, you know, to earn somehow the work of Jesus, and how self-control figures into that. Cause it's like, you know, I'll get God to work if I work in really hard, kind of what she was dealing with a financial thing.
Yeah.
But I love that self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. We didn't teach it that way. We would read that scripture, and then self-control is all about you making the responsible choice. You doing you. And that was the one fruit that wasn't what Jesus bore in us. It was what I had to make happen for him. And I when we see self-control, because I think it's very important. One of the things that I struggle with in the current world in which we live in, and particularly the political environment that we're in right now in this middle of this election, is the question of what's the right thing to do never comes up. It's what will most benefit the Republicans, what will most benefit the Democrats, what will we'll say, yeah, it's not good to put in a Supreme Court nominee in the last part of someone's presidential thing. We're getting ready to vote. But now that we can do it, we are going to do it. Nobody sits, and I don't mind them doing it. I think they have a constitutional right to go ahead and do that. So I'm not against that decision. But then it was quite a bit of a lie 3.5 years ago when you're not going to do a 12 months of Obama's thing just because you don't like his nominee. And how we, and I, one of my other little soapboxing, how we've politicized the Supreme Court now. It's not somebody that's put in by 60% vote of the Senate. So you've got to get someone more in moderate that you can pick up some people from the opposite party so that you're finding a more centrist judge rather than an extremist judge. Now we've politicized the Supreme Court. We've politicized nominees for it because nobody cares about what's the right thing to do anymore. What we care about is what's most advantageous to me or my party. And I love seeing self-control as a fruit of the Spirit, the freedom to do what's right, even if it's not in my best interest. And we have no examples in the public sphere of that anymore. And that's what's tragic. Because I was always trained growing up, what I was, you know, what's the right thing to do here, Wayne? Not what does Wayne want to do and what can Wayne get away with? And I still got away with stuff, and I still lived a lot to my own self-interest, because I think that's what broken humanity is. It's all about self-interest. But maybe the fruit of all this relativism we've talked about, that there really is no right or wrong, everybody needs to do what's best in the world. We're now reaping the whirlwind of that kind of thinking, that there isn't really a right thing to be done for a higher good. It's all what's most advantageous. I'll say anything it takes to get elected. And Trump's doing that. Biden's doing that. It's not a one political party is the good or evil here. It's that we've lost the moral compass that says it's not right to be rude and interrupt you. It's not right, no matter how much angst I feel and how much I want to bash you or bully you or whatever. There's some way to live that's right, and there's ways to live that are wrong. And our society's lost that because we've made everything relative and we've lost the moral compass. So I think the self-control thing is there's a way to live beyond my expedience. And that's a fruit that God produces in me. That's not Wayne's self-will. And I was, you know, I'm a Pharisectomy guy. So I was the Pharisee guy that I had a strength of will. And if I decided I wasn't going to do that anymore, I didn't do that anymore. If I wanted to do that, I did do that. I had that strength of will. But I know enough about people to know most people, that's only maybe 10% of the population that have that. And even then, I would still make decisions in regard to my own good. but I love the idea. I know God's inviting me back into that space where I'm in the middle of a situation, and my question is, what's the right thing here? And I don't mean some legalistic performance, got to please God. I just want to live to a higher ideal than whatever it is that Wayne wants or whatever is expedient for me at someone else's advantage, where I'm taking advantage of someone else or exploiting someone else. And that's where we've lost it. We were going to talk about The Social Dilemma. I don't think we'll get there today. We'll do it next time. It's a great film. And if you haven't seen it, take a look at it, because we're going to drill down on it probably next week. There's a lot I'd love to share from that. But what's behind all that is, once monetizing something is the only value, now you're no longer left with what's right or wrong.
Yeah.
What's for the better good of the culture? Because it's not. It's just how much money can we make for our investors? And whatever that does to exploit and hurt people, we don't care.
Yeah.
Because that's their problem. And then we get back to self-control. That's their problem because they have no self-control. So never mind that we're making an addictive product intentionally, just like the cigarette manufacturers did years ago. We're intentionally ramping up the addictive quality. Why? To make money. Is that right? No, that's not right. And I do think the whole way that God invites us into love and trust and then produces self-control in us, which isn't Wayne does whatever Wayne wants, whatever benefits him. Wayne learns to ask the question, what's the right thing to do here? Instead of what do I want to do here? And people who don't have self-control, all they ask is, what do I want? And they got to try to figure out what they want. And they got to compete this desire versus that desire instead of... And then some choices are just a matter of what do you want to do. That there's some, like, you know, what I want to have for dinner, or what there's some, you know, I think need God's will for everything. No right thing to have for dinner. Okay. There are better things to have for dinner sometimes than I eat. I get that. But the whole idea of self-control is I come into the space of realizing life doesn't revolve around me. Hmm. And so now I'm looking for that moral compass. It isn't a bunch of legalistic rules. It's about generosity. It's about kindness. It's about honesty. It's about graciousness to other people. There's right ways to live, even when you're being mistreated by people. There's still a right way to live. Somebody else's mistreatment of you doesn't give me the right to mistreat them. But in this self-expedient age, yes, it does. And yes, we do. And we don't care. And it's just so hard to live in the brokenness of that world right now. I am overwhelmed by it, how hard it is for people to even back off and grab a moral compass enough to set how they're going to live in the world. And to me, that's where self-control comes from. And I love that it's a fruit of the Spirit, not a performance thing Wayne has to give to God. But If you're not going to make choices that way, you're going to get in the weeds a lot. One of the devotionals I worked on today that I've written, I guess sometime back, I don't remember where I wrote this, but it said, you really have two choices. You can go your own way. And like God said, I will keep following you to help you fix, you know, be with you. Or you can learn to follow me and not get near the number of messes you're getting into. And I didn't say that as well as it says it in the book, because I don't have it in front of me, but I sat and thought about that for a long time today. Well, I can just, you know, ask God to bless me as I go doing my thing. Or I can learn what it is to follow him and end up less of those things from which I need to be rescued by my own selfishness.
I love what you just unpacked there as far as self-control. I'm sitting here, my mind's just kind of scrambling, honestly, because there's quite a bit of what you just said that I haven't really even dialogued. I haven't heard talked about in the Christian circles. I mean, even the fact of honestly, genuinely considering self-control as a fruit of the Spirit, something that God is working out in you instead of something that you have to try to master, or it's one of the disciplines of Christianity versus a fruit of the Spirit.
Right.
Because for me, it was always a discipline. And you know, I guarantee you that it's still in my mind, in some regards, a discipline versus a fruit of the Spirit.
Wow.
And as you're talking through that, I'm just thinking about my own perspective, and even the conversation, you know, that that we had about a month ago where, you know, in my mind, it was like, yeah, you made your bed just now, you got to sleep in it. I mean, that's, I mean, oh my gosh. Like, and yet as I'm sitting there listening to you talking about that, it's like, man, that's how I treat my heart too. Like, that's so how I treat my heart. And that's, you know, and Brené Brown talks about how when the way that we treat our hearts is eventually how we will treat the hearts of those that we love the most. You know, and I'm just thinking about that and thinking about self-control and how I view it versus what you just unpacked there. And it's like, oh man, got to explore that one some more because it's definitely more of a discipline of Christianity versus a fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah. And if Brené Brown is right, and I think she is, then we can also look at how we're treating people we love the most to kind of get a view on how we're treating ourselves internally.
Yeah.
Kind of messages we give to ourselves. So, yeah, well, we didn't get to the social dilemma too much to unpack from the other stuff. But gosh, I hope we have more conversations about this. I think the lack of a moral compass, particularly having a president right now who has zero self-control. And when you're talking about, you know, you just don't hear it discussed in Christian circles anymore. And this is whether or not you like Trump's policy. It's not an anti-Trump thing. Don't put me in that box. But he obviously is a man that doesn't have self-control, and yet he's championed by so many Christians. Why? Because they don't have it either. And so their hero becomes a guy who epitomizes what their own dilemma is inside, that I don't know what self-control is. I just know I'm being bullied by those people, so I'm going to bully back. And that's what I heard one guy say to me last week. He said, you know, the thing that will hurt the most if Trump is not reelected is that MSNBC and the New York Times win. I'm going, really?
Wow.
That's what this is about. Yeah. It's that those lies won against our, they won't say lies, but I think they mean that. But it's interesting that a man who is so lacking in self-control in so many ways is the moral hero for so many Christians coming into this election. And man, that breaks my heart, because I think I love self-control being a fruit of the Spirit. I did the whole 40 years of it being a work. I've done that part of it. I just, I love seeing now where, man, you're in the space of love and trust enough that I don't have to do what's best for me. I can look at what's right and what's the better choice for not just me, but others as well. Anyway, way past time. Let's get to the social dilemma next week, huh, Kyle?
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.